If all went well, the entire city would soon expect a hasting withdrawal. Their allies would plan for it and might even begin to withdraw themselves. People seeking to buy weapons would instead look other places, fearing that Hastings wouldn't be able to make good on contracts once it left. When Hastings didn't withdraw, it would make them look indecisive. Their allies gone, their income weakened, they could very well be the next house to fall. House Hastings, however, was one of the easy ones to work against. It had a reputation for extreme subterfuge, and people would believe that it was planning a secret retreat. In addition, Hastings was a strong mercantile house, meaning it depended a great deal upon its contracts to survive. A house with such an obvious dominating source of income also had an obvious weakness. Lord Hastings had worked hard to increase his house's influence over the last few decades, and in doing so he had extended his house's resources to their limits. Other houses were far more stable. Vin sighed, turning and strolling down the walkway, eyeing the massive clock set between the balconies on the other side of the chamber. Venture would not fall easily. It remained powerful through the sheer force of fortune. Though it participated in some contracts, it didn't rely on them like other houses. Venture was rich enough and powerful enough that even mercantile disaster would only jostle it. In a way, Venture's stability was a good thing, for Vin at least. The house had no obvious weaknesses, so maybe the crew wouldn't be too disappointed when she couldn't discover any way to bring it down. After all, they didn't absolutely need to destroy House Venture. Doing so would simply make the plan go more smoothly. Whatever happened, Vin had to make sure that Venture didn't suffer the same fate as House Tikiel. Their reputation destroyed, their finances unhinged, the Tikiel had tried to pull out of the city, and this final show of weakness had been too much. Some of Tikiel's nobility had been assassinated before they left. The rest had been found in the burned-out ruins of their canal boats, apparently hit by bandits. Vin, however, knew of no thieving band who would dare slaughter so many noblemen. Kelsier still hadn't been able to discover which house was behind the murders, but the Luthadel nobility didn't seem to care who the culprit was. House Tikiel had allowed itself to grow weak, and nothing was more embarrassing to the aristocracy than a great house that couldn't maintain itself. Kelsier had been right. Though polite groups met at balls, the nobility were more than willing to stab each other square in the chest if it benefited them. Kind of like thieving crews, she thought. The nobility really aren't that different from the people I grew up around. The atmosphere was only made more dangerous by its polite niceties. Underneath that front were plots, assassinations, and, perhaps most importantly, Mistborn. It was no accident that all of the balls she had attended recently had displayed great numbers of guards, both wearing armor and not. The parties now served the additional purpose of warning and showing strength. "Elend is safe," she told herself. "Despite what he thinks of his family, they've done a good job of maintaining their place in the Luthadel hierarchy. He's the heir. They'll protect him from assassins." She wished those assertions sounded just a bit more convincing. She knew that Shan Alariel was planning something. House Venture might be safe, but Elend himself was a little bit oblivious sometimes. If Shan did something against him personally, it might or might not be a major blow against House Venture. But it would certainly be a major blow against Vin.
"Lady Valette Renew," a voice said. "I do believe that you're late."
Vin turned to see Elend lounging in an alcove to her left. She smiled, glancing down at the clock, noticing that it was indeed a few minutes past the time when she had promised to meet him. "I must be picking up bad habits from some friends of mine," she said, stepping into the alcove.
"Now see, I didn't say it was a bad thing," Elend said, smiling. "Why, I'd say that it is a lady's courtly duty to be a bit dilatory. It does gentlemen good to be forced to wait upon a woman's whims, or so my mother was always fond of telling me."
"It sounds like she was a wise woman," Vin said. The alcove was just large enough for two people standing sideways. She stood across from him, the balcony overhang a short distance to her left, a marvelous lavender window to her right, their feet nearly touching.
"Oh, I don't know about that," Elend said. "She married my father, after all."
thereby joining the most powerful house in the final empire. You can't do much better than that, though I suppose she could have tried to marry the Lord Ruler. Last I knew, though, he wasn't in the market for a wife.
Pity, Ellen said. Maybe he'd look a little less depressed if there were a woman in his life.
I guess that would depend on the woman.
Finn glanced to the side as a small group of court-goers strolled past.
You know, this isn't exactly the most private location. People are giving us odd looks.
You're the one who stepped in here with me, Ellen pointed out.
Yes, well, I wasn't thinking about the gossip we might start.
Let it start, Ellen said, standing up straight.
Because it will make your father angry?
Ellen shook his head. I don't care about that anymore, Valette.
Ellen took a step forward, bringing them even closer together. Vin could feel his breath. He stood there for a moment before speaking.
I think I'm going to kiss you.
Vin shivered slightly.
I don't think you want to do that, Ellen.
Why?
How much do you really know about me?
Not as much as I'd like to, he said.
Not as much as you need to, either, Vin said, looking up into his eyes.
So tell me, he said.
I can't. Not right now.
Ellen stood for a moment, then nodded slightly and pulled away. He walked out onto the balcony walkway.
So, shall we go for a stroll, then?
Yes,
Vin said, relieved, yet just a bit disappointed as well.
It's for the best, Ellen said.
That alcove has absolutely terrible reading light.
Don't you dare,
Vin said, eyeing the book in his pocket as she joined him on the walkway.
Read when you're with someone else, not me.
But that's how our relationship began.
And that's how it could end, too, Vin said, taking his arm.
Ellen smiled. They weren't the only couple walking the balcony, and down below, other pairs spun slowly to the faint music.
It seems so peaceful. Yet just a few days ago, many of these people stood and watched idly as women and children were beheaded.
She felt Ellen's arm, his warmth, beside her. Kelsier said that he smiled so much because he felt he needed to take what joy he could in the world, to relish the moments of happiness that seemed so infrequent in the Final Empire. Strolling for a time beside Ellen, Vin thought she was beginning to understand how Kelsier felt.
Valette, Ellen said slowly.
What?
I want you to leave Luthadel, he said.
What?
He paused, turning to look at her.
I've thought about this a lot. You may not realize it, but the city is becoming dangerous. Very dangerous.
I know.
Then you know that a small house without allies has no place in the central dominance right now, Ellen said. Your uncle was brave to come here and try to establish himself, but he chose the wrong time. I think things are going to get out of hand here very soon. When that happens, I can't guarantee your safety.
My uncle knows what he's doing, Ellen.
This is different, Valette, Ellen said. Entire houses are falling. The Tikiel family wasn't slaughtered by bandits. That was the work of House Hastings. Those won't be the last deaths we see before this is through.
Vin paused, thinking of Shan again.
But you're safe, right? House Venture? It's not like the others. It's stable.
Ellen shook his head. We're even more vulnerable than the rest, Valette.
But your fortune is large, Vin said. You don't depend on contracts.
They may not be visible, Ellen said quietly, but they're there, Valette. We put on a good show and the others assume that we have more than we do. However, with the Lord Ruler's house taxings, well, the only way we maintain so much power in this city is through income. Secret income.
Vin frowned, and Ellen leaned closer, speaking almost in a whisper.
My family mines the Lord Ruler's atium, Valette,
he said. That's where our wealth comes from. In a way, our stability depends almost completely on the Lord Ruler's whims. He doesn't like to bother collecting the Atium himself, but he gets very perturbed if the delivery schedule is disrupted.
Find out more, Instinct told her. This is the secret. This is what Kelsier needs.
Oh, Elend, Vin whispered. You shouldn't be telling me this.
Why not? He said. I trust you. Look, you need to understand how dangerous things are. The Atium supply has been having some troubles lately. Ever since... well, something happened a few years ago. Ever since then, things have been different. My father can't meet the Lord Ruler's quotas, and last time that happened...
What?
Well, Ellen said, looking troubled. Let's just say that things could soon grow very bad for the Vengers. The Lord Ruler depends on that Atium, Velette. It's one of the prime ways he controls the nobility. A house without Atium is a house that can't defend itself from Mistborn. By keeping a large reserve, the Lord Ruler controls the market, making himself extremely wealthy. He funds his armies by making Atium scarce, then selling extra bits for lavish amounts. If you knew more about the economics of Allomancy, this would probably make a lot more sense to you.
Oh, trust me, I understand more than you think. And now I know far more than I should.
Ellen paused, smiling pleasantly as an obligator strolled along the balcony walkway beside them. The obligator looked them over as he passed, eyes thoughtful within their web of tattoos. Ellen turned back to her as soon as the obligator had passed.
I want you to leave, he repeated. People know that I've paid attention to you. Hopefully they'll assume it was just despite my father, but they could still try to use you. The great houses wouldn't have any qualms about crushing your entire family just to get at me and my father. You have to go.
I'll think about it, Vin said.
There isn't much time left for thinking, Ellen warned. I want you to leave before you get too involved with what is going on in this city.
I'm already involved so much more than you think.
I said I'd think about it, she said. Look, Ellen, I think you should be more worried about yourself. I think Shan Alariel is going to try something to strike against you.
Shan? Ellen said with amusement. She's harmless.
I don't think she is, Ellen. You need to be more careful.
He laughed. Look at us. Each one trying to convince the other how dreadfully dire the situation is. Each one bullheadedly refusing to listen to the other. Vin paused, then smiled. Ellen sighed. You're not going to listen to me, are you? Is there anything I can do to make you leave?
Not right now, she said quietly.
Look, Ellen, can't we just enjoy the time we have together? If things continue as they are, we might not have many more opportunities like this for a while.
He paused, then finally nodded. She could see he was still troubled, but he did turn back to their walk, letting her gently take his arm again as they strolled. They walked together for a time, silent until something drew Vin's attention. She removed her hands from his arm, instead reaching down to take his hand in her own. He glanced at her, frowning in confusion as she tapped the ring on his finger.
It really is metal, she said,
a bit surprised, despite what she'd been told. Ellen nodded. Pure gold.
Don't you worry about
allomancers? Ellen asked. He shrugged. I don't know. They're not the sort of thing that I've ever had to deal with. You don't wear metal out on the plantations? Vin shook her head, tapping one of the barrettes in her hair.
Painted wood, she said.
Ellen nodded. Probably wise, he said. But, well, the longer you stay in Luthadel, the more you'll realize that little we do here is done in the name of wisdom. The Lord Ruler wears metal rings, and so therefore does the nobility. Some philosophers think that's all part of his plan. The Lord Ruler wears metal because he knows that the nobility will mimic him, and therefore give his inquisitors power over them.
Do you agree?
Vin asked, taking his arm again as they walked.
With the philosophers, I mean.
Ellen shook his head. No, he said in a quieter voice. The Lord Ruler, he's just arrogant. I've read of warriors long ago who would run into battle without armor on, supposedly to prove how brave and strong they were. That's how this is, I think, though admittedly on a far more subtle level. He wears metal to flaunt his power, to show how unfrightened, how unthreatened he is by anything we could do to him.
Well, Vin thought, he's willing to call the Lord Ruler arrogant. Perhaps I can get him to admit a little more.
Ellen paused, glancing over at the clock. I'm afraid I don't have a whole lot of time tonight, Valette.
That's right, Vin said. You'll need to go off and meet with your friends.
She glanced at him, trying to gauge his reaction. He didn't seem very surprised. He simply raised an eyebrow in her direction. Indeed I will. You're very observant.
It doesn't take much observing, Vin said. Any time we're at Keeps Hasting, Venture, Lekal, or Illyriel, you run off with the same people.
My drinking friends, Ellen said with a smile. An unlikely group in today's political climate, but one that helps annoy my father.
What do you do at these meetings? Vin asked.
We talk philosophy mostly, Ellen said. We're kind of a stuffy lot, which isn't too surprising, I guess, if you know any of us. We talk about the government, about politics, about the Lord Ruler.
What about him?
Well, we don't like some of the things he's done with the Final Empire.
So you do want to overthrow him, Vin said.
Ellen gave her a strange look. Overthrow him? What gave you that idea, Valette? He's the Lord Ruler. He's God. We can't do anything about him being in charge. He looked away as they continued to walk. No, my friends and I, we just wish the Final Empire could be a little different. We can't change things now, but maybe someday, assuming we all survive the next year or so, we'll be in positions to influence the Lord Ruler.
To do what?
We'll take those executions a few days ago, Ellen said. I don't see that they did any good. The Ska rebelled. In reprisal, the Ministry executed a few hundred random people. What is that going to do besides make the populace even more angry? So next time the rebellion will be bigger. Does that mean that the Lord Ruler will order more people beheaded? How long can that continue before there just aren't any Ska left? Vin walked thoughtfully.
And what would you do, Ellen Venture, she finally said, if you were in charge?
I don't know, Ellen confessed. I've read a lot of books, some that I'm not supposed to, and I haven't found any easy answers. I'm pretty certain, however, that beheading people won't solve anything. The Lord Ruler has been around for a long time. You'd think he'd have found a better way. But anyway, we'll have to continue this later. He slowed, turning to look at her.
Time already? She asked.
Ellen nodded. I promised I'd meet them, and they kind of looked to me. I suppose I could tell them I'll be late. Vin shook her head.
Go drink with your friends. I'll be fine. I have a few more people I need to talk to anyway.
She did need to get back to work. Breeze and Doxon had spent hours planning and preparing the lies that she was supposed to spread, and they would be waiting for her report back at Clubs's shop after the party. Ellen smiled. Maybe I shouldn't worry about you so much. Who knows? Considering all of your political maneuvering, maybe House Renu will soon be the power in town and I'll just be a lowly beggar. Vin smiled and he bowed, winking at her, then was off toward the stairs. Vin walked slowly over to the balcony railing, looking down at the people dancing and dining below.
So he's not a revolutionary, she thought. Kelsier was right again. I wonder if he ever gets tired of that.
But still, she couldn't feel too disappointed with Ellen. Not everyone was so insane that they'd think to overthrow their god emperor. The mere fact that Ellen was willing to think for himself set him apart from the rest. He was a good man.
one who deserved a woman who was worthy of his trust. Unfortunately, he had Vin.
So House Venture secretly mines the Lord Ruler's Atium, she thought. They must be the ones who administer the pits of Hath-Sin.
It was a frighteningly precarious position for a house to be in. Their finances depended directly on pleasing the Lord Ruler. Elland thought that he was being careful, but Vin was worried. He wasn't taking Shan Alariel seriously enough, of that Vin was certain. She turned, walking intently from the balcony and down to the main floor. She found Shan's table easily. The woman always sat with a large group of attendant noblewomen, presiding like a lord over his plantation. Vin paused. She'd never approached Shan directly. Someone, however, needed to protect Elland. He was obviously too foolish to do it himself. Vin strode forward. Shan's terraceman studied Vin as she approached. He was so different from Sazed, he didn't have the same spirit. This man maintained a flat expression, like some creature carved of stone. A few of the ladies shot disapproving glances toward Vin, but most of them, Shan included, ignored her. Vin stood awkwardly beside the table, waiting for a lull in the conversation. There was none. Finally, she just took a few steps closer to Shan.
"Lady Shan?" she asked.
Shan turned with an icy glare.
"I didn't send for you, country girl."
"Yes, but I found some books like you—"
"I no longer require your services," Shan said, turning away. "I can deal with Elland Venture on my own. Now be a good little twit and stop bothering me."
Vin stood, stunned.
"But your plan—"
"I said that you are no longer needed.
You think I was harsh on you before, girl? That was when you were on my good side. Try annoying me now."
Vin wilted reflexively before the woman's demeaning gaze. She seemed disgusted, angry even. Jealous?
She must have figured it out, Vin thought. She finally realized that I'm not just playing with Elland. She knows that I care for him and doesn't trust me to keep her secrets.
Vin backed away from the table. Apparently, she would have to use other methods to discover Shan's plans. Despite what he often said, Elland Venture did not consider himself to be a rude man. He was more of a verbal philosopher. He liked to test and turn conversation to see how people would react. Like the great thinkers of old, he pushed boundaries and experimented with unconventional methods.
Of course, he thought, holding his cup of brandy up before his eyes, inspecting it musingly. Most of those old philosophers were eventually executed for treason. Not exactly the most successful role models.
His evening political conversation with his group was finished, and he had retired with several friends to keep Lical's Gentleman's Lounge, a small chamber adjacent to the ballroom. It was furnished in deep green colors, and the chairs were comfortable. It would have been a nice place to read, had he been in a slightly better mood. Jastes sat across from him, puffing contentedly on his pipe. It was good to see the young Lical looking so calm. These last few weeks had been difficult for him.
House war, Elland thought. What terrible timing. Why now? Things were going so well.
Teldon returned with a refilled drink a few moments later.
You know, Jastes said, gesturing with his pipe, any one of the servants in here would have brought you a new drink.
I felt like stretching my legs, Teldon said, settling into the third chair.
And you flirted with no less than three women on your way back, Jastes said. I counted.
Teldon smiled, sipping his drink. The large man never just sat, he lounged. Teldon could look relaxed and comfortable no matter what the situation, his sharp suits and well-styled hair enviably handsome.
Maybe I should pay just a little more attention to things like that, Elland thought to himself. Valette suffers my hair the way it is, but would she like it better if I had it styled?
Elland often intended to make his way to a stylist or tailor, but other things tended to steal his attention. He'd get lost in his studies or spend too long reading, then find himself late for his appointments. Again.
"Elland is quiet this evening," Teldon noticed.
Though other groups of gentlemen sat in the dim lounge, the chairs were spread out enough to allow for private conversations.
"He's been like that a lot lately," Jastis said.
"Ah, yes," Teldon said, frowning slightly.
Elland knew them well enough to take the hint.
"Now see, why must people be like this? If you have something to say, why not simply say it?"
"Politics, my friend," Jastis said. "We are, if you haven't noticed, noblemen."
Elland rolled his eyes.
"All right, I'll say it," Jastis replied, running his hand through his hair, a nervous habit that Elland was sure contributed somewhat to the young man's growing baldness. "You're spending a lot of time with that Renew girl, Elland."
"There is a simple explanation for that," Elland said. "You see, I happen to like her."
"Not good, Elland," Teldon said with a shake of his head. "Not good."
"Why?" Elland asked.
"You seem pleased enough to ignore class variances yourself, Teldon. I've seen you flirt with half the serving girls in the room."
"I'm not heir to my house," Teldon said.
"And," Jastis said, "these girls are trustworthy. My family hired these women. We know their houses, their backgrounds, and their allegiances."
Elland frowned. "What are you implying?"
"Something strange about that girl, Elland," Jastis said.
He'd gone back to his normal nervous self, his pipe sitting unnoticed in its holder on the table. Teldon nodded.
"She got too close to you too quickly, Elland. She wants something."
"Like what?"
Elland asked, growing annoyed.
"Elland, Elland," Jastis said. "You can't just avoid the game by saying you don't want to play. It'll find you." "Renew moved into town just as house tensions began to rise, and he brought with him an unknown scion, a girl who immediately began to woo the most important and available young man in Luthadel. Doesn't that seem odd to you?"
"Actually," Elland noted, "I approached her first, if only because she had stolen my reading spot."
"But you have to admit that it's suspicious how quickly she latched on to you," Teldon said. "If you're going to dabble with romance, Elland, you need to learn one thing. You can play with women if you want, but don't let yourself get too close to them. That's where the trouble starts."
Elland shook his head.
"The let is different."
The other two shared a look, then Teldon shrugged, turning back to his drink. Jastis, however, sighed, then stood and stretched.
"Anyway, I should probably be going."
"One more drink," Teldon said.
Jastis shook his head, running a hand through his hair.
"You know how my parents are on ball nights. If I don't go out and bid farewell to at least some of the guests, I'll be nagged about it for weeks."
The younger man wished them good night, walking back toward the main ballroom. Teldon sipped his drink, eyeing Elland.
"I'm not thinking about her," Elland said testily.
"What then?"
"The meeting tonight," Elland said. "I'm not sure if I like how it went."
"Bah," the large man said with a wave of his hand. "You're getting as bad as Jastis. What happened to the man who attended these meetings just to relax and enjoy time with his friends?"
"He's worried," Elland said. "Some of his friends might end up in charge of their houses sooner than he expected. And he's worried that none of us are ready."
Teldon snorted.
"Don't be so melodramatic," he said, smiling and winking to the serving girl who came to clear away his empty cups. "I have a feeling that this is all just going to blow over. In a few months we'll look back and wonder what all the fretting was about."
"Kael Tekiel won't look back," Elland thought. The conversation waned, however, and Teldon eventually excused himself. Elland sat for a while longer, opening the Dictates of Society for another read, but he had trouble concentrating. He turned the cup of brandy in his fingers, but didn't drink much.
I wonder if Valette's out yet.
He tried to find her once his meeting was over, but apparently she'd been in a private gathering of her own.
That girl, he thought lazily, is far too interested in politics for her own good.
Perhaps he was jealous. Only a few months in court, and she already seemed to be more competent than he was. She was so fearless, so bold, so interesting. She didn't fit any of the courtly stereotypes he'd been taught to expect.
Could Jastie's be right, he wondered. She certainly is different from other women. And she did imply there were things about her I didn't know.
Eldon pushed the thought out of his mind. Valette was different, true, but she was also innocent in a way. Eager, full of wonder and spunk. He worried about her. She obviously didn't know how dangerous Luthadel could be. There was so much more to politics in the city than simple parties and petty intrigues. What would happen if someone decided to send a Mistborn to deal with her and her uncle? Renew was poorly connected, and none of the court's members would blink twice at a few assassinations in Feliz. Did Valette's uncle know how to take the proper precautions? Did he even worry about allomancers? Elland sighed. He'd just have to make certain that Valette left the area. That was the only option. By the time his carriage reached Keep Venture, Elland had decided that he'd drunk too much. He made his way up to his rooms, looking forward to his bed and pillows. The hallway to his bedroom, however, passed by his father's study. The door was open, and light still spilled out despite the late hour. Elland tried to walk quietly on the carpeted floor, but he'd never really been all that stealthy.
"Elland,"
his father's voice called from the study.
"Come in here."
Elland sighed quietly. Lord Strathventure didn't miss much. He was a tin eye. His senses were so keen that he'd probably heard Ellen's carriage approaching outside.
"If I don't deal with him now, he'll just send the servants to pester me until I come down to speak with him."
Elland turned and walked into the study. His father sat in his chair, speaking quietly with Ten Soon, the Venture Chandra. Elland still wasn't used to the creature's most recent body, which had once belonged to a servant in the Hastings household. Elland shivered as it noticed him. It bowed, then quietly retreated from the room. Elland leaned against the doorframe. Straff's chair sat in front of several shelves of books, not a single one of which Elland was confident his father had ever read. The room was lit by two lamps, their hoods mostly closed to allow out only a bit of light.
"You attended the ball tonight," Straff said. "What did you learn?"
Elland reached up, rubbing his forehead.
"Then I have a tendency to drink far too much brandy."
Straff was not amused by the comment. He was the perfect imperial nobleman, tall, firm-shouldered, always dressed in a tailored vest and suit.
"You met with that woman again?" he asked.
"Valette?" "Yes. Not for as long as I would have liked, though."
"I forbade you from spending time with her."
"Yes," Elland said. "I remember."
Straff's expression darkened. He stood, walking over to the desk.
"Oh, Elland," he said, "when are you going to get over this childish temperament you have? Do you think I don't realize that you act foolishly simply to spite me?"
"Actually, I got over my childish temperament some time ago, Father. It just seems that my natural inclinations work even better to annoy you. I wish I had known that earlier. I could have saved a great deal of effort in my younger years."
His father snorted, then held up a letter.
"I dictated this to Staxels a short time ago. It is an acceptance of a lunch appointment with Lord Tegar tomorrow afternoon. If a house ward does come, I want to make certain we are in a position to destroy the Hastings as quickly as possible, and Tegar could be a strong ally. He has a daughter. I'd like you to dine with her at the luncheon."
"I'll consider it," Elland said, tapping his head. "I'm not sure what kind of state I'll be in tomorrow morning. Too much brandy, remember?"
"You'll be there, Elland," This is not a request.
Elland paused. A part of him wanted to snap back at his father to make a stand, not because he cared about where he dined, but because of something far more important.
Hastings is the second most powerful house in the city. If we made an alliance with them, together we could keep Luthadel from chaos. We could stop the house war, not inflame it.
That's what his books had done to him. They had changed him from rebellious fop into would-be philosopher. Unfortunately, he'd been a fool for so long. Was it any wonder that Straff hadn't noticed the change in his son? Elland himself was only starting to realize it. Straff continued to glare at him, and Elland looked away.
"I'll think about it," he said.
Straff waved his hand dismissively, turning. Trying to salvage something of his pride, Elland continued,
"You probably don't even have to worry about the Hastings. It seems that they're making preparations to bolt the city."
"What?" Straff asked.
"Where did you hear that?"
"At the ball," Elland said lightly.
"I thought you said you didn't learn anything important."
"Now, see, I never said anything of the sort. I just didn't feel like sharing with you." Lord Venture frowned.
"I don't know why I even care. Anything you learn is bound to be worthless. I tried to train you in politics, boy, I really did. But now, well, I hope I live to see you dead, because this house is in for dire times if you ever take control."
"I know more than you think, Father."
Straff laughed, walking back to sit in his chair.
"I doubt that, boy. Why, you can't even bet a woman properly. The last and only time I know about you trying it, I had to take you to the brothel myself."
Elland flushed.
"Careful," he told himself. "He's bringing that up on purpose. He knows how much it bothers you."
"Get to bed, boy," Straff said with a wave of his hand. "You look terrible."
Elland stood for a moment, then finally ducked out into the hallway, sighing quietly to himself.
"That's the difference between you and them, Elland," he thought. "Those philosophers you read, they were revolutionaries. They were willing to risk execution. You can't even stand up to your father."
He walked tiredly up to his rooms, where, oddly, he found a servant waiting for him. Elland frowned.
"Yes?"
"Lord Elland, you have a guest," the man said.
"At this hour?"
"It's Lord Jasty's Lacal, my lord."
Elland cocked his head slightly.
"What in the Lord Ruler's name?"
"He's waiting in the sitting room, I assume?"
"Yes, my lord,"
the servant said. Elland turned regretfully away from his chambers, walking back down the hallway. He found Jasty's waiting impatiently.
"Jasty's," Elland said tiredly, walking into the sitting room. "I hope you have something very important to tell me."
Jasty's shuffled uncomfortably for a moment, looking even more nervous than normal.
"What?" Elland demanded, his patience waning. "It's about the girl."
"Valette?" Elland asked. "You came here to discuss Valette? Now?"
"You should trust your friends more," Jasty's said.
Elland snorted.
"Trust your knowledge of women? No offense, Jasty's, but I think not."
"I had her followed, Elland," Jasty's blurted out.
Elland paused.
"What?"
"I had her carriage followed. Or at least I had someone watch for it at the city gates. She wasn't in it when it left the city."
"What do you mean?"
Elland asked, his frown deepening.
"She wasn't in the carriage, Elland," Jasty's repeated. "While her terraceman was producing papers for the guards, my man snuck up and peeked through the carriage window, and there was nobody inside. The carriage must have dropped her off somewhere in town. She's a spy from one of the other houses. They're trying to get at your father through you. They created the perfect woman to attract you. Dark-haired, a bit mysterious, and outside of the regular political structure. They made her lowborn enough that it would be a scandal for you to be interested in her, then set her on you. Jastis, this is ridic- Elland, Jastis interrupted. Tell me one more time. How did you meet her the first time?
Elland paused.
She was standing on the balcony. In your reading spot, Jastis said. Everyone knows that's where you usually go. Coincidence?
Elland closed his eyes. Not Valette. She can't be part of all this. But immediately another thought occurred to him.
I told her about the Atium. How could I be so stupid?
It couldn't be true. He wouldn't believe that he had been duped so easily.
But could he risk it?
He was a bad son, true, but he was no traitor to the house. He didn't want to see Venture fall. He wanted to lead it someday, so that perhaps he'd be able to change things. He bid Jastis farewell, then walked back to his rooms with a distracted step. He felt too tired to think about house politics. However, when he finally got into bed, he found that he couldn't sleep. Eventually, he rose, sending for a servant.
"Tell my father I want to make a trade," Elland explained to the man.
"I'll go to his luncheon tomorrow, just as he wants." Elland paused, standing in his evening robe by his bedroom door.
"In exchange," he finally said, "tell him I want to borrow a couple of spies so that they can follow someone for me."
The others all think I should have had Quan executed for betraying me. To tell the truth, I'd probably kill him this moment if I knew where he'd gone. At the time, however, I just couldn't do it. The man had become like a father to me. To this day, I don't know why he suddenly decided that I wasn't the hero. Why did he turn against me, denouncing me to the entire conclave of Worldbringers? Would he rather that the Deepness win?
Surely, even if I'm not the right one, as Quan now claims, my presence at the Well of Ascension couldn't possibly be worse than what will happen if the Deepness continues to destroy the land.
29. It's almost over, Vin read. We can see the cavern from our camp. It will take a few more hours of hiking to reach it, but I know that it is the right place. I can feel it somehow. Feel it up there, pulsing in my mind. It's so cold. I swear that the rocks themselves are made of ice, and the snow is deep enough in places that we have to dig our way through. The wind blows all the time. I fear for Fedic. He hasn't been quite the same since the creature made of mist attacked him, and I worry that he will wander off a cliffside or slip through one of the many icy rifts in the ground. The Terracemen, however, are a wonder. It is fortunate that we brought them, for no regular packmen would have survived the trip. The Terracemen don't seem to mind the cold. Something about their strange metabolisms gives them a supernatural ability to resist the elements. Perhaps they have saved up heat from their bodies for later use? They won't talk about their powers, however, and I am sure that Rashik is to blame. The other packmen look to him for leadership, though I don't think he has complete control over them. Before he was stabbed, Fedic feared that the Terracemen would abandon us up here in the ice. I don't think that will happen, however. I am here by providence of Terrace prophecies. These men will not disobey their own religion, simply because one of their number has taken a dislike to me. I did finally confront Rashik. He did not want to speak to me, of course. But I forced him. Unleashed, he spoke at great length regarding his hatred of Chlenium and my people. He thinks that we have turned his people into little more than slaves. He thinks that Terracemen deserve far more. He keeps saying that his people should be dominant because of their supernatural powers. I fear his words, for I see some truth in them. Yesterday, one of the packmen lifted a boulder of enormous size, then tossed it out of our way with an almost casual throw. I have not seen such a feat of strength in all my days. These Terracemen could be very dangerous, I think. Perhaps we have treated them unfairly. However, men like Rashik must be contained. He irrationally believes that all people outside of Terrace have oppressed him.
He is such a young man to be so angry. It is so cold. When this is finished, I think I should like to live where it is warm all year. Braches has told of such places. Islands to the south, where great mountains create fire. What will it be like when this is all over? I will be just a regular man again. An unimportant man. It sounds nice, more desirable even than a warm sun and a windless sky. I am so tired of being the hero of ages, tired of entering cities to find either armed hostility or fanatic adoration. I am tired of being loved and hated for what a bunch of old men say I will eventually do. I want to be forgotten. Obscurity. Yes, that would be nice. If men read these words, let them know that power is a heavy burden. Seek not to be bound by its chains. The terrorist prophecies say that I will have the power to save the world. They hint, however, that I will have the power to destroy it as well. I will have the ability to fulfill any wish of my heart. He will take upon himself authority that no mortal should hold. Yet the philosophers warned me that if I am self-serving with the power, my selfishness will taint it. Is this a burden that any man should bear? Is this a temptation any man could resist? I feel strong now, but what will happen when I touch that power? I will save the world, certainly, but will I try to take it as well? Such are my fears as I scribble with an ice-crusted pen on the eve before the world is reborn. Rashik watches, hating me. The cavern lies above, pulsing. My fingers quiver, not from the cold. Tomorrow it will end. Vin eagerly turned the page. The back page of the booklet, however, was empty. She turned it over, regarding the last few lines. Where was the next entry? Says it must not have finished the last part yet. She stood, sighing as she stretched. She'd finished the entire newest portion of the logbook in one sitting, a feat that surprised even her. The gardens of Mansion Renu extended before her, the cultured pathways, broad-limbed trees, and quiet stream creating her favorite reading spot. The sun was low in the sky, and it was beginning to get chilly. She wound her way up the path toward the mansion. Despite the chill evening, she could barely imagine a place like the one the Lord Ruler described. She had seen snow on some distant peaks, but she had rarely seen it fall, and even then it was usually just an icy slush. To experience that much snow day after day, to be in danger of having it fall upon you in great crushing avalanches. A part of her wished that she could visit such places, no matter how dangerous. Though the logbook didn't describe the Lord Ruler's entire journey, some of the marvels it did include, the ice fields to the north, the Great Black Lake, and the terrace waterfalls, sounded amazing. If only he'd put in more detail about what things look like, she thought with annoyance. The Lord Ruler spent far too much time worrying. Though admittedly she was beginning to feel an odd sort of familiarity with him through his words, she found it hard to associate the person in her mind with the dark creature that had caused so much death. What had occurred at the Well of Ascension? What could have changed him so drastically? She had to know. She reached the mansion and went searching for Sazed. She was back to wearing dresses. It felt odd to be seen in trousers by anyone but the crew members. She smiled at Lord Renew's interior steward as she passed, eagerly climbing the main entryway stairs and seeking out the library. Sazed wasn't inside. His small desk sat empty, the lamp extinguished, the inkwell empty. Ben frowned in annoyance. Wherever he is, he'd better be working on the translation. She went back down the stairs, asking after Sazed, and a maid directed her to the main kitchen. Vin frowned, making her way down the back hallway. Getting himself a snack, perhaps? She found Sazed standing amongst a small group of servants, pointing toward a list on the table and speaking in a low voice. He didn't notice Vin as she entered. Sazed?
Vin asked, interrupting him. He turned.
"Yes, Mistress Valette," he asked, bowing slightly.
"What are you doing?"
"I am seeing to Lord Renew's food stores, mistress. Though I have been assigned to assist you, I am still his steward, and have duties to attend to when I am not otherwise occupied."
"Are you going to get back to the translation soon?" Sazed cocked his head.
"Translation, mistress. It is finished."
"Where's the last part, then?"
"I gave it to you," Sazed said.
"No, you didn't," she said. "This part ends the night before they go into the cavern."
"That is the end, mistress. That is as far as the logbook went."
"What?" she said. "But..."
Sazed glanced at the other servants.
"We should speak of these things in private, I think."
He gave them a few more instructions, pointing at the list, then nodded for Vin to join him as he made his way out the back kitchen exit and into the side gardens. Vin stood dumbfounded for a moment, then hurried out to join him.
"It can't end like that, Sayes. We don't know what happened."
"We can surmise, I think," Sayes had said, walking down the garden path.
The eastern gardens weren't as lavish as the ones Vin frequented, and were instead made up of smooth brown grass and the occasional shrub.
"Surmise what?" Vin asked.
"Well, the Lord Ruler must have done what was necessary to save the world, for we are still here."
"I suppose," Vin said. "But then he took the power for himself.
That must have been what happened. He couldn't resist the temptation to use the power selfishly."
"But why isn't there another entry? Why wouldn't he speak further of his accomplishments?"
"Perhaps the power changed him too much," Sazed said.
"Or maybe he simply didn't feel a need to record any more. He had accomplished his goal and had become immortal as a side benefit. Keeping a journal for one's posterity becomes somewhat redundant when one is going to live forever, I think." "That's just..."
Vin ground her teeth in frustration.
"It's a very unsatisfying end to a story, Sazed."
He smiled in amusement.
"Be careful, mistress. Become too fond of reading, and you may just turn into a scholar."
Vin shook her head.
"Not if all the books I read are going to end like this one."
"If it is of any comfort," Sazed said, "you are not the only one who is disappointed by the logbook's contents. It didn't contain much that Master Kelsier could use. Certainly there was nothing about the 11th medal. I feel somewhat guilty, since I am the one who benefited most from the book.
But there wasn't very much about the Terrace religion, either."
"Not much," Sazed agreed. "But truly and regretfully, not much is far more than we knew previously. I am only worried that I will not have an opportunity to pass this information on. I have sent a translated copy of the logbook to a location where my brethren and sister keepers will know to check. It will be a pity if this new knowledge were to die with me."
"It won't," Vin said.
"Oh? Has my lady suddenly become an optimist?"
"Has my terraceman suddenly become a smart mouth?" Vin retorted.
"He always has been, I think," Sazed said with a slight smile. "It is one of the things that made him a poor steward, at least in the eyes of most of his masters."
"Then they must have been fools," Vin said honestly.
"So I was inclined to think, mistress," Sazed replied. "We should return to the mansion. We should not be seen out in the gardens when the mists arrive, I think. I'm just going back out into them. There are many of the grounds staff that do not know you are Mistborn, mistress," Sazed said. "It would be a good secret to keep, I think."
"I know," Vin said, turning. "Let's go back, then. A wise plan."
They walked for a few moments, enjoying the eastern garden's subtle beauty. The grasses were kept carefully trimmed, and they had been arranged in pleasant tiers, the occasional shrubbery giving accent. The southern garden was far more spectacular, with its brook, trees, and exotic plants. But the eastern garden had its own peace, the serenity of simplicity.
Sazed,
Vin said in a quiet voice.
Yes, mistress? It's all going to change, isn't it?
What specifically do you mean?
Everything, Vin said.
Even if we aren't all dead in a year, the crew members will be off working on other projects. Ham will probably be back with his family. Docs and Kelsier will be planning some new escapade. Clubs will be renting his shop to another crew. Even these gardens that we've spent so much money on, they'll belong to someone else.
Sazed nodded.
What you say is likely. Though if things go well, perhaps the Ska Rebellion will be ruling Luthadel by this time next year.
Maybe, Vin said. But even still, things will change.
That is the nature of all life, mistress, Sazed said. The world must change.
I know, Vin said with a sigh. I just wish... Well, I actually like my life now, Sazed. I like spending time with the crew, and I like training with Kelsier. I love going to balls with Elend on the weekends, love walking in these gardens with you. I don't want these things to change. I don't want my life to go back to the way it was a year ago.
It doesn't have to, mistress, Sazed said.
It could change for the better.
It won't, Vin said quietly. It's starting already. Kelsier has hinted that my training is almost finished. When I practice in the future, I'll have to do it alone. As for Elend, he doesn't even know that I'm Ska, and it's my job to try and destroy his family. Even if House Venture doesn't fall by my hand, others will bring it down. I know Chanelario is planning something, and I haven't been able to discover anything about her schemes. That's only the beginning, though. We face the final empire. We'll probably fail. To be honest, I don't see how things could possibly turn out otherwise. We'll fight, we'll do some good, but we won't change much. And those of us who survive will spend the rest of our lives running from the Inquisitors. Everything's going to change, Sazed, and I can't stop it.
Sazed smiled fondly.
Then, mistress, he said quietly, simply enjoy what you have. The future will surprise you, I think.
Maybe, Vin said, unconvinced.
Ah, you just need to have hope, mistress. Perhaps you've earned a little bit of good fortune. There were a group of people before the Ascension known as the Astalsai. They claimed that each person was born with a certain finite amount of ill luck. And so, when an unfortunate event happened, they thought themselves blessed. Thereafter, their lives could only get better.
Vin raised an eyebrow. Sounds a bit simple-minded to me.
I do not believe so, Sazed said. Why, the Astalsai were rather advanced. They mixed religion with science quite profoundly. They thought that different colors were indications of different kinds of fortune, and were quite detailed in their descriptions of light and color. Why, it's from them that we get some of our best ideas as to what things might have looked like before the Ascension. They had a scale of colors, and used it to describe the sky of the deepest blue and various plants in their shades of green. Regardless, I find their philosophies regarding luck and fortune enlightened. To them, a poor life was only a sign of fortune to come. It might be a good fit for you, mistress. You could benefit from the knowledge that your luck cannot always be bad.
I don't know, Vin said skeptically. I mean, if your bad luck were limited, wouldn't your good luck be limited too? Every time something good happened, I'd be worried about using it all up.
Sazed said. I suppose that depends on your viewpoint, mistress.
How can you be so optimistic? Vin said. You and Kelsey are both.
I don't know, mistress, Sazed said. Perhaps our lives have been easier than yours. Or perhaps we are simply more foolish.
Vin fell silent.
They walked for a short time longer, weaving their way back toward the building, but not rushing the walk.
"Sazed," she finally said, "when you saved me that night in the rain, you used Ferrochemy, didn't you?"
Sazed nodded.
"Indeed. The Inquisitor was very focused on you, and I was able to sneak up behind him, then hit him with a stone. I had grown many times stronger than a regular man, and my blow threw him into the wall, breaking several of his bones, I suspect."
"Is that it?" Vin asked. "You sound disappointed, mistress," Sazed noted, smiling. "You expected something more spectacular, I suppose?" Vin nodded.
"It's just, you've been so quiet about Ferrochemy. That makes it seem more mystical, I guess."
Sazed sighed.
"There is really little to hide from you, mistress. The truly unique power of Ferrochemy, the ability to store and recover memories, you must surely have already guessed. The rest of the powers are not different, really, from the powers granted to you by Pewter and Tin. A few of them are a little more odd, making a Ferrochemist heavier or changing his age, but they offer little martial application."
"Age?" Vin said, perking up. "You could make yourself younger?"
"Not really, mistress," Sazed said. "Remember, a Ferrochemist must draw his powers from his own body. He could, for instance, spend a few weeks with his body aged to the point that it felt and looked 10 years older than he really was. Then he could withdraw that age to make himself seem 10 years younger for an equal amount of time. However, in Ferrochemy, there must be a balance."
Vin thought about that for a moment.
"Does the metal you use matter?" she asked. "Like an allomancy?"
"Most certainly," Sazed said.
"The metal determines what can be stored."
Vin nodded and continued to walk, thinking over what he'd said.
"Sazed, can I have a bit of your metal?" she finally asked.
"My metal, mistress?"
"Something you've used as a ferrochemical store," Vin said. "I want to try burning it. Maybe that will let me use some of its power."
Sazed frowned curiously. "Has anyone ever tried it before?"
"I'm sure someone must have," Sazed said. "But I honestly can't think of a specific example. Perhaps if I were to go search my memory copper mines."
"Why not just let me try it now?" Vin asked. "Do you have something made from one of the basic metals? Something you haven't stored anything too valuable in?"
Sazed paused, then reached up to one of his oversized earlobes and undid an earring much like the one Vin wore.
He handed the earring's tiny backing, used to hold the earring in place, to Vin.
"It is pure pewter, mistress. I have stored a moderate amount of strength in it."
Vin nodded, swallowing the tiny stud. She felt at her allomantic reserve, but the stud's metal didn't seem to do anything different. She tentatively burned pewter.
"Anything?" Sazed asked.
Vin shook her head.
"No, I don't."
She trailed off.
"There was something there, something different."
"What is it, mistress?" Sazed asked, uncharacteristic eagerness sounding in his voice.
"I can feel the power, Saze. It's faint, far beyond my grasp, but I swear that there's another reserve within me, one that only appears when I'm burning your metal."
Sazed frowned.
"It's faint, you say? Like you can see a shadow of the reserve, but can't access the power itself?"
Vin nodded.
"How do you know?" "That's what it feels like when you try to use another ferrochemist's metals, mistress," Sazed said, sighing. "I should have suspected this would be the result. You cannot access the power, because it does not belong to you."
"Oh," Vin said.
"Do not be too disappointed, mistress. If allomancers could steal strength from my people, it would already be known. It was a clever thought, however."
He turned, pointing toward the mansion.
The carriage has already arrived. We are late for the meeting, I think.
Vin nodded, and they hurried their pace toward the mansion.
Funny, Kelsier thought to himself as he slipped across the darkened courtyard before Mansion Renew. I have to sneak into my own house as if I were attacking some nobleman's keep.
There was no avoiding it, however, not with his reputation. Kelsier the thief had been distinctive enough. Kelsier the rebellion instigator and Ska spiritual leader was even more infamous. That didn't, of course, keep him from spreading his nightly chaos. He just had to be more careful. More and more families were pulling out of the city, and the powerful houses were growing increasingly paranoid. In a way, that made manipulating them easier, but sneaking around their keeps was getting very dangerous. In comparison, Mansion Renew was virtually unprotected. There were guards, of course, but no mistings. Renew had to keep a low profile. Too many allomancers would make him stand out. Kelsier kept to the shadows, carefully making his way around to the east side of the building. Then he pushed off a coin and guided himself up onto Renew's own balcony. Kelsier landed lightly, then peeked through the glassy balcony doors. The drapes were shut, but he could pick out Dotson, Vin, Sazed, Ham, and Breeze, standing around Renew's desk. Renew himself sat in the far corner of the room, staying out of the proceedings. His contract included playing the part of Lord Renew, but he didn't wish to be involved in the plan any more than he had to. Kelsier shook his head. It would be far too easy for an assassin to get in here. I'll have to make sure that Vin continues to sleep at Clubs's shop. He wasn't worried about Renew. The Condra's nature was such that he didn't need to fear an assassin's blade. Kelsier tapped lightly on the door, and Dachshund strolled over, pulling it open.
And he makes his stunning entry, Kelsier announced, sweeping into the room, throwing back his mist cloak. Dachshund snorted, shutting the doors. You're truly a wonder to behold, Kel, particularly the soot stains on your knees. I had to do some crawling tonight, Kelsier said, waving an indifferent hand. There's an unused drainage ditch that passes right under Keep Lical's defensive wall. You'd think they'd get that patched up.
I doubt they need worry, Breeze said from beside the desk. Most of you Mistborn are probably too proud to crawl. I'm surprised you were willing to do so yourself.
Too proud to crawl, Kelsier said. Nonsense. Why, I'd say that we Mistborn are too proud not to be humble enough to go crawling about. In a dignified manner, of course.
Dachshund frowned, approaching the desk.
Kel, that doesn't make any sense. We Mistborn need not make sense, Kelsier said haughtily.
What's this?
From your brother, Dachshund said, pointing at a large map laid across the desk. It arrived this afternoon in the hollow of a broken table leg that the Canton of Orthodoxy hired Clubs to repair.
Interesting, Kelsier said, scanning the map.
It's a list of the soothing stations, I assume?
Indeed, Breeze said. It's quite the discovery. I've never seen such a detailed, carefully drawn map of the city. Why, it not only shows every one of the 34 soothing stations, but also locations of Inquisitor activity, as well as places that the different cantons are concerned about. I haven't had the opportunity to associate much with your brother, but I must say that the man is obviously a genius.
It's almost hard to believe he's related to Kel, eh? Dachshund said with a smile.
He had a notepad before him, and was in the process of making a list of all the soothing stations. Kelsier snorted.
Marsh might be the genius, but I'm the handsome one.
What are these numbers?
Inquisitor raids and dates, Ham said. You'll notice that Vin's crew house is listed.
Kelsier nodded.
How in the world did Marsh manage to steal a map like this?
He didn't, Dachshund said as he wrote. There was a note with the map. Apparently High Prelins gave it to him. They've been very impressed with Marsh, and wanted him to look over the city and recommend locations for new soothing stations.
It seems that the Ministry is a bit worried about the house war, and they want to send out some extra soothers to try and keep things under control.
We're supposed to send the map back inside the repaired table leg, Sazed said. Once we are done this evening, I shall endeavor to copy it in as short a time as possible.
And memorize it as well, thereby making it part of every keeper's record, Kelsier thought. The day when you'll stop memorizing and start teaching is coming soon, Says. I hope your people are ready.
Kelsier turned, studying the map. It was as impressive as Breeze had said. Indeed, Marsh must have taken an extremely great risk in sending it away. Perhaps a foolhardy risk, even. But the information it contained...
We'll have to get this back quickly, Kelsier thought. Tomorrow morning, if possible.
What is this?
Vin asked quietly, leaning across the large map and pointing. She wore a noblewoman's dress, a pretty one-piece garment that was only slightly less ornate than a ball gown. Kelsier smiled. He could remember a time when Vin had looked frighteningly awkward in a dress, but she seemed to have taken an increasing liking to them. She still didn't move quite like a noble-born lady. She was graceful, but it was the dexterous grace of a predator, not the deliberate grace of a courtly lady. Still, the gowns seemed to fit Vin now. In a way, they had nothing at all to do with tailoring.
Ah, mare, Kelsier thought. You always wanted a daughter you could teach to walk the line between noblewoman and thief.
They would have liked each other. They both had a hidden streak of unconventionality. Perhaps if his wife were still alive, she could have taught Vin things about pretending to be a noblewoman that even Sazed didn't know.
Of course, if Mare were still alive, I wouldn't be doing any of this. I wouldn't dare.
Look, Vin said. One of these Inquisitor dates is new. It's marked as yesterday.